Good afternoon, folks, and welcome. It's time to break free. I will be your host for the hour, David Matthew Rock, coming to you live from the constitutional carry state of Arizona via the Patriot broadcast from the trenches, 89.5 FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson, simulcast on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, the Grow Your Own channel, 107.5 FM, Greenville, South Carolina, Hal Apino's channel, 87.9 FM, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and many more micro-broadcasts and webcasts heard around the world. Take the time to check out the number one source of Patriot news on the web at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. If you'd like to contact me via email, I can be reached at DavidMatthewRock@gmail.com. This is a live call-in program. Come on up and share your thoughts and experiences. Unlike the mainstream media, listener participation is appreciated. The call-in number is 641-715-3610. Once connected, you'll be asked for the conference room number, which is 220029 and the pound sign. Hit star 6 to unmute. All right, it is currently 1:05 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. It's 102 degrees in Casa Grande, Arizona, sunny with 28% humidity. Today we're going to play a video of Elliot Chodoff, an Israeli Defense Force general, speaking at the Christians United for Israel summit in 2017. Excuse my language, but he's a piece of shit warmongering Jew. We will get into it as soon as we return from these messages from our sponsors.
The phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, a proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueNutritionNow.com. That's TrueNutritionNow.com. Then call 520-829-1133. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
If you had purchased $100 of Bitcoin in 2010, today you'd have $2,600,000. While that sinks in, you now have a huge cryptocurrency opportunity trading at a guaranteed 10 cents per coin. Procoin, a coin publicly traded on the open market, easily converted to cash, available in 60 countries, and Procoin is the only cryptocurrency offering coin-back rewards for consumers and merchants. Take action by July 31st at procoincurrency.net. That's procoincurrency.net. Deadline for 10 cent guarantee is July 31st.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Dr. Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Crumbiliumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson.
All right, folks. We're going to be playing a clip here. I got to keep my commentary short because it's kind of long. You can find it on the Trenches. The exact title is Elliot Chodoff, Q&A, 2017 Kufi Summit. And let's get it going.
Have a bit of a problem in grappling both with understanding who they are and who we are. So I'm not going to do the who we are type part. That's another lecture, another course maybe, and a book that I'm writing, by the way. I'm writing a book now called Know Your Enemy, Know Yourself. You might have recognized the quote somewhere. But what I do want to talk about is what's happening today as a result of what happened some 6 months ago. And going back even further. And the 6 months ago, of course, is the new administration coming in. But it was appeasement. Now, there are two elements to appeasement. One that we're very familiar with, and that is basically letting your enemy get away with murder. Literally. Oh, no, I speak literally. Okay. And to advance on you and so on and so forth and make inroads. But there's another aspect of it. Churchill defined appeasement as feeding your friends to the crocodiles and hoping they eat you last. The downside, of course, is that eventually you run out of friends, the crocodiles are still hungry, and you don't have any friends. Anybody know what the traditional prayer of the century is? Dear Lord, may it not happen on my shift. So if you can push it down the road a little bit, you do it. And that's what we've seen typically over previous administrations. They don't just quietly slip into the water. They get ornery, they get nasty, and they come after you. And that's essentially what we're seeing today in the world in its initial stages. And I'm hesitant here because there are going to be bumps in the road along the way, and I'm not going to predict, because at any point along the way, an administration, no matter how positive thinking it is and how positive minded it is, ultimately, if this carries its way down the road, will reach the point where it has to decide, go to war or don't go to war. Okay. And that's a tough decision, and it's one that nobody really wants to make. Now, we're used to criticizing decisions. We do it all the time. My advisor in grad school, Morris Janowitz, brilliant sociologist, used to say that the only real decisions you ever have to make are to choose between bad and worse. Right? Because between good and bad, any idiot can make a decision. And between good and good, who cares? Why agonize over it? By the way, this is true on a personal level as well. If you've ever had to make a really tough decision and you didn't feel good about it, that's because you made a bad decision. It was just better than the alternatives. So here I want to make a distinction between bad and wrong. The decision to go to war is always a bad decision. It may be the right decision, but it's always the wrong one. It's always a bad one. Which is why, legitimately, correctly, leaders of democracies agonize over it and often make the decision too late. Would moving the embassy to Jerusalem incite war? It depends, and I'm not hedging the answer. I'll tell you what I mean, because, you know, I don't duck questions. If it's done precipitously, it will likely incite war. If it's done correctly, it will likely not. And correctly means with diplomatic preparation. In other words, what America needs to do is to sit with its friends, allies, and clients in the Middle East, and I don't mean Israel, and explain to them diplomatically. By the way, I'm an honored graduate of the Don Vito Corleone School of Negotiating. Okay. And you sit with them and you explain how the world works and how it's going to work. And you say, this is what we're doing. No, no joke. Without, I don't have to go into the details, right? This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it, because reality. Israel has a capital. It's called Jerusalem. And it's stupid for our embassy not to be there. I like reality. It's a really good thing. This is what it means. In other words, this is what we are recognizing as a status quo, and this is what we are not recognizing. And here I'm not getting into whether that's good policy or bad. I'm talking about what needs to be done. That's stage one. Stage two, this is what we expect from you. You don't have to like it, but you have to put up with it. You want to send a complaint through the State Department? We'll be happy to receive it. You want to have a few demonstrations and talk about how terrible it is? That's your right. You want to start doing more than that? See me after class. Okay. And do it to countries and remind them, and this is something that America has been very poor at except with Israel, remind them who needs whom more. Remind them what America does for them and not the other way around. Remind the Saudis, for example, what their Iranian neighbors are planning for them. And say, look, we're friends, we're allies, we're in this together, and these are the limits of your response. You need to make it for domestic reasons, you need to do it for regional reasons, that's all good. If that's done, then the likelihood, it's all probability obviously, but the likelihood of war breaking out as a result is, I think, very, very low. If he gets up this morning and says, we're moving the embassy tomorrow, I think the shock effect there could be very detrimental. So, like any good policy, I think it needs to be done properly. First of all, any military that says it's ready for war is either stupid or lying. Okay, you're never ready for war. You can be as prepared as possible, but you're never ready. Here, I think we're at a level lower than that. By the way, Israel's been working very hard over the past decade to bring it up to that, to its level. We still have a way to go. Everybody does. Let's remember that the United States in 1941 was supremely unready for war. In other words, this is a country that can mobilize and get its act together very, very quickly if it has the will and the interest to do so. And those are ifs, but it has it. The capability is there. And for those who aren't familiar with the numbers, let me just give you one quick one that's kind of interesting. In 1939, there were 500,000 Americans in uniform. In 1945, there were 12 million Americans in uniform. While America was producing weapons, outstripping everybody and supplying the Russians, the Canadians, the Brits, and everybody out there. In other words, industry was running at full speed, and 12 million Americans were in uniform. So America certainly has that capability. Somebody has to wake up and say, we're going to do it. And it also comes, it's a budget issue. In other words, there are painful decisions to get to that point. Last but not least, you listed a whole bunch of connections, and I won't repeat them. Here I would just be a little bit careful. The world we're in today is very, very different than the world we grew up in. We grew up, we all grew up in the same period, which was an unusual, if not unique, period in history called the Cold War. We had 50 years of incredible stability. Now, it had its moments. 1962, for example, Cuba. It had its moments. But we're talking about a period of 50 years where basically nobody changed sides. Egypt was the glaring exception. Went from the Soviet to the American orbit in the 70s, thanks to Kissinger's diplomacy. But if you think about it, for 50 years, you had the list. And with a couple of minor countries on the edge, the list, NATO, Warsaw Pact, Western versus communist bloc, was that. Today we're in a much more classical period where today's friends are tomorrow's enemies and vice versa. Let's not forget that in August 1939, Hitler and Stalin signed a non-aggression pact, which lasted until June 41 when Germany invaded Russia. Friends, enemies, come and go. When the Kaiser declared war in 1914, he was convinced the British would remain neutral. How on earth could the British come to the support of the French when the Germans and the British defeated the French 100 years earlier in against Napoleon? Okay, so I'm not impressed by those connections as such, but there will be connections, okay? But they're much more superficial today than they ever were. I mean, Russia and Turkey have an arrangement. Russia and Turkey are natural classical enemies. All right. One final thing that I do want to say on the subject, though, the Korean-Chinese connection is an interesting one. The Chinese don't particularly love the North Koreans. But if North Korea goes under, China is the big loser because it'll have a Western country on its border. And for those who are familiar with the history of the Korean War and the American March North, that really scares them. So there are also a whole bunch of secondary issues here that aren't, you know, up on the top tier that also have to be considered. The bottom line, though, yes, I think we're looking at a major global situation, whether it erupts in multi-front and that sort of thing remains to be seen. America certainly has to be prepared for it, and it's not near it. The Chinese expansion. China is a whole subject in and of itself. As of now, China has remained in its traditional position as an Asian power, not a global one. Now, economically, it's global and it's always been. But in terms of political power and military power, it's primarily Asian. It looks upon American meddling in the South China Sea, in its terms, as if it were meddling in the Caribbean. Okay, so that's their perspective on it. I'm not saying I accept it, but we have to understand what they're thinking if we're going to poke them the right way. But in the meantime, they haven't pushed much beyond that. You're in shock. I love it. Going once, going twice. Yes.
How do you read the incursion of the border between Israel and Syria that's taken place maybe in the last couple of weeks? Is it just nothing? Does it mean something?
Okay. You're talking about the shells coming across? Okay. Yes. Because they're not incursions. They're not crossing.
Okay.
Let's be clear. What we're seeing along the border, two related things. First, a quick description of who's on the other side in order to understand it better. We've got a 60-some-odd-mile border with Syria. Across that border, some 60 terrorist organizations. It's the most densely packed terrorist organization zone in the world. And it's our backyard. Now, they include names that you all know and love, like Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, an organization that calls itself Fatah Hashams, used to call themselves Jabhat al-Nusra. They're an Al-Qaeda clone. One of the reasons they broke with Al-Qaeda is because they thought Al-Qaeda was too moderate. Another organization called Shuhada al-Yarmouk, you know them as ISIS. So those are the biggies. And then we've got a whole bunch, maybe 50 or so smaller organizations, ranging in size between 2,000 and 5,000 each, scattered around the south-central area across our border, for those who are familiar, south of Quneitra. And they're actually more of a problem than the big organizations. Because the big organizations have a hierarchy, and they've got a strategy, and they've got a command system, and frankly, their leaders want to stick around. Right? I mean, please note, you don't rise up through the ranks to leadership in a suicide organization. Right? So they can be threatened. Again, see note Don Vito Corleone. They can be threatened. ISIS opened fire on one of our patrols a year or so ago. They didn't kill anybody. We returned the favor. We did kill them, and the Air Force went in just to make sure the job was done, and we haven't heard from them since. ISIS stated 2 years ago they fear one country in the world, Israel, because we take them seriously. Show them a little respect. Don't call them the JV. If they mess with you, kill them and let them know that you take them seriously. It sounds crazy, but that's how it works. The smaller organizations, on the other hand, are much more volatile. They're much harder to keep track of and control, and they're the ones who make more mischief along the border. So that's one, that's sort of background. Now, in recent weeks, and again, in part because of the change in administration policy, three links removed, but everything has an effect. We're seeing increased activity along the border from both sides. In other words, from the government side, which is trying to retake territory, and from the opposition slash terrorist side, not that the government is a terrorist, I'm just trying to keep the team straight, trying to either retain territory or grab from each other. In other words, there's a volatility that wasn't there before on a day-to-day basis. We'd see it in pulses, and now we're seeing it pretty much in perpetuity. The overflow into Israel is a combination of sloppiness and intent. Okay, the sloppiness is because when the Syrian army started shelling terrorists along the border, every now and then a shell would fly long and land in Israel. So we asked them nicely once, we told them not so nicely twice, the third time we took out the battery that fired the shell. And they learned. Their gunnery got much better. With these organizations, there's nobody really to respond to. And here again, we're talking about the Middle East and particularly the smaller organizations. One of the ways, unfortunately, we've learned this with the Palestinian organizations as well, one of the ways that you gain market share among your population is to kill a few Jews. It's always good for a little bit better position. Which is, by the way, why the PA, why the Palestinian Authority pays terrorists. It's not just because they like them, it's also because they like them. But because this way they can show they're part of it without being part of it. Yani. Okay? So that's what we're seeing again, is a little more chaos, a little more pushing, a little more jockeying, and the fact that it's in our backyard means that it overflows to us partly by intent. They're not actually aiming and shooting. They're shooting with a little more wildness so that it's falling on our side. Okay, so first of all, let me clarify a point. I wouldn't call it Islam. I would call it Islamists. And here I'm a stickler. There is no war on terrorism. There's a war on terrorists. Right? Terrorism is a method. You don't fight methods. No, let me, okay? And let me even be clearer than that. I wouldn't readily blanket say it's Islam because there's an accuracy problem there that's a whole issue in and of itself. But we are talking about a political movement, clearly, and let's not be sticklers over that they're certainly going on. You cannot fight an ideology. You can't fight an ideology. People, mostly the generation before us, thought that Nazism was defeated in May 1945. It wasn't. The Nazis were defeated. Nazi Germany was defeated. But Nazism is still alive and well. And wearing all sorts of different cloaks, including radical Islamic. Okay? I'm preparing a presentation for tomorrow. I'm going to be speaking to Ohio State's Department of Homeland Security, and if I'd known this question were coming up, I'd show you, but you can Google this. It's really simple. Google Hamas salute, Google Hezbollah salute, and go into images. And you know what you're going to see? Okay. The precise angle, it's not a coincidence. So the ideologies persist because people pick them up. They don't disappear. You have to fight the ideologues, and you have to fight their followers. And there we need to call it what it is. Okay, it's radicalism, it's fascism, it's Nazism, it's a toxic mix of all of the above. But what we're fighting, the enemy, are the people who are propagating it, the people who are recruiting those to propagate it. And who said the method of warfare has to be on the battlefield? Since when? Clausewitz, who knew a little bit about war, I don't know if you've ever read On War. If you have, you know that it's unreadable in every language. But Clausewitz wrote that war is an extension of policy by additional means. In other words, war is just the method. Look at the policy. Look at the objectives. That's what needs to be thwarted. And it's not being done because America in particular, Europe is Europe, but America in particular, I have to say this, and again, analytically, America is more process-oriented than goal-oriented. We're interested in process. We're interested when the Syrians use chemical weapons. If they kill 700,000 people with bullets, well, that's okay. That's process. Okay. Until we become objective, goal-oriented, and winning is about setting objectives and achieving them, then they're going to continue advancing. Because their objective is clearly to dismantle the society. And that's not guesswork. You just have to read it. Okay.
You survey Muslims in the UK, 85% or so.
All right, we're going to stop it there, folks. It was only a couple seconds from being done. I just want to make a correction. Elliot is a major in the Israeli Defense Force. And we're going to start our bottom of the hour break now.
The phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, a proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueNutritionNow.com. That's TrueNutritionNow.com. Then call 520-829-1133. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
If you had purchased $100 of Bitcoin in 2010, today you'd have $2,600,000. While that sinks in, you now have a huge cryptocurrency opportunity trading at a guaranteed 10 cents per coin. Procoin, a coin publicly traded on the open market, easily converted to cash, available in 60 countries, and Procoin is the only cryptocurrency offering coin-back rewards for consumers and merchants. Take action by July 31st at procoincurrency.net. That's procoincurrency.net. Deadline for 10 cent guarantee is July 31st.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Crumbiliumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin,
the state of Jefferson.
What I hate is a statesman speaking out of both sides of his mouth. What I hate is a war still going on down in the South. What I live for is a chance to change a little bit of it all. What I hate is most folks don't seem to care at all. What I hate is looking up and seeing chemtrails in a clear blue sky today. What I hate is hitting roadblocks on a highway in my way. And what I live for is a chance to change and be everything I can be. What I love is someone bright enough to see. What I hate is what I hate, and I always will. What I hate is someone mad enough to kill. What I love is someone with a heart that's really good. Now we can't change the whole wide world. Maybe we can change our neighborhood.
Time to Break Free is a listener-sponsored broadcast. If you'd like to help keep this program on the air, go to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com and hit that donate button. Or you can mail donations to Henry Shively at Post Office Box 964, Chiloquin, Oregon 97624. Your contributions are appreciated. All right, folks, it is 1:39 Arizona Mountain Time, p.m., and I want to, I'm going to read the drawing real quick, but I just want to give our callers a chance to call in, because when I'm done reading the drawing, I have a few things lined up, but if we can keep the whole end of the show open for our callers, I'd like to do that. So let's go over here, and we're going to discuss the drawing. Okay. All right. Mary Flea, Norm Halapino are sponsoring a drawing for From the Trenches World Report. .com. Mary has provided four prizes. The first drawing will be for a pair of Midland Talker two-way radios. The second drawing from our sponsor Doom and Bloom will be for the Survival Medicine Handbook by Joseph and Mary Alton and a Luminade Solar Lantern. The third drawing will be for Curing the Incurable by Thomas E. Levy and Only by Blood and Suffering by Lavoie Finicum. The fourth drawing, also from our sponsor, Doom and Bloom, will be for the Survival Medicine Handbook by Joseph and Amy Alton and a SWAT T tourniquet. Flea has provided a sun oven for the fifth drawing. Norm has provided a set of M1 Grand Receiver blueprints rolled in a tube for the sixth drawing. Hal Apino has provided three prizes. The seventh drawing will be for a new Fulton MX-991/U angle head flashlight military issue. The eighth drawing will be for two new Alice LC-1 first aid/compass pouches. The ninth drawing will be for six P38 can openers. Every dollar donated equals one entry in the drawing. All those who have donated since the last drawing are automatically entered, unless specifically asked not to be. The drawing will be held July 28, 2017, in the final segment of The Word from the Trenches. We extend our thanks to Mary, Flea, Norm, Hal Apino for providing the prizes. All donations are needed and appreciated. Good luck to all those who step up. So do we have any callers queued up? Does anybody want to bring... Anybody want to express their thoughts? I know there's a bit of a delay, so I kind of have to keep talking while you guys are coming up. So just anytime, come up. So actually, I got this guy's bio pulled up. But are you ready to conscript 12 million Americans to go die for Israel? Because that seems like, to me, that's what I was getting from this gentleman. And when he was talking about we're not always fighting our battles on the battlefield, then, yeah, they're fighting an information war. I don't want to quote that piece of shit Alex Jones, but that's what we have going on. That's what's going on YouTube right now, the fact that they're squashing down all our truth channels, or just in the Google search queue in general, the fact that they're putting all of our websites and all of the stuff affiliated with what we're doing right down at the bottom of the search and trying to make us just not exist. So any callers yet? All right, so might as well read this guy's bio real quick. His website is called Mid East on Target. It's me-ontarget.org. So Elliot P. Chodoff. Elliot Chodoff is a political and military analyst specializing in Middle East conflict and the global war on terrorists. He has presented and published papers on the subjects of deterrence and U.S. military manpower policy, cultural relativism, nuclear deterrence policy in the Middle East, Israel's changing defense posture following the 1982 invasion of Lebanon, terrorist use of modern information technology. I wonder who he's talking about. And regional deterrence during and after the Cold War. His paper on combat motivation and effectiveness in infantry units has been on the recommended reading list for the U.S. Army War College. His articles have appeared in the Washington Times, National Post of Canada, the National Interest, National Review, and the Front Page magazine, and Yeah, I guess there's a magazine called The Front Page, and numerous web journals. Elliot is a major in the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, Reserves, and is a graduate of the Home Front Commander Senior Commander's Course. He presently serves as the population officer in the operations branch of the IDF Northern Command. From 2002 to 2011, he was the commanding officer of the Population Behavior and Information Unit of the Northern Region in IDF Home Front Command. That's a mouthful. In that capacity, he served on active duty in the north for 5 weeks during the Second Lebanon War of 2006. He served in Gush Katif during the Gaza disengagement in the summer of 2005. He was a member of the rescue teams in the aftermath of the bombing of the Taba Hilton in 2004 and in the Carmel fire in 2010. Now, this is coming from his website, so who knows. He is an expert in infantry weapons and tactics. He has taught courses in fieldcraft and small unit tactics to infantry, paratroop, and special operations officers. Elliot received the IDF Home Front Commanding Outstanding Officer Award in 2006. Elliot is a graduate of the Ramaz School in New York, something that I got to look further into, actually. He received a BA with honors in sociology and a BS in biological sciences from SUNY at Stony Brook and a MA in sociology from the University of Chicago. He is writing a PhD dissertation in international relations at Bar-Ilan University on deterrence of terrorist organizations. He is an adjunct lecturer at the University of Haifa, and he was the Bornblum Lemsky Visiting Scholar at the University of Memphis for the spring semesters of 2007, 2008, and 2009. As an educator for over 35 years, Elliot has lectured to a wide range of audiences and programs in Israel and abroad. He teaches and lectures on the topics of the Middle East conflict, terrorism, and responses, military thought and strategy, military aspects of international conflict, Arab-Israeli relations, the sociology of modern Israel, and the history of Zionism. Elliot moved to Israel in 1983 and is a founding member of Ashkar, a community village in the Galil, where he resides. A licensed tour guide, he also leads educational tours throughout Israel. So what I'm getting from this is, this is the type of person that they're parading in front of our politicos. This is the type of person they're parading in front of our college students. And the video that we reviewed here, the audio that you were listening to, that was Christians United for Israel. You remember last Friday I played some clips from them. That's Pastor Hagee's organization. So go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Sorry to cut in, but I figured it better. It's just about getting up there. But anyway, I listened to that audio clip you played. Glad to hear the guy's over in Israel. He doesn't actually live on my soil here. And anyway, I thought that part was interesting when he talked about how, you know, when ISIS comes into Israel, you know, they show him who's boss, basically, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, they are ISIS, Israel. I mean, you know, you ever wonder, well, how come ISIS didn't ever go into Israel? You know, anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree, Katie. If they were to put their – they all say Israel's the biggest threat. They all say death to Israel. But they're never putting their chips together, organizing, and moving against Israel. So you really have to question what's going on there. And I thought it was interesting. I don't know if I'm going to be quoting him perfectly, but he said something about – they like the larger terrorist groups because they're easier to control, and that it's the small terror cells that are the wild cards, so to speak. Anybody else have any other thoughts? Okay. Now, we had an article posted at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com yesterday by number one New World Order hater titled, Imagining Trump's Big Beautiful Wall. You might have to. It came out of Yahoo News by Christopher Wilson. So, I don't know if I should really get into reading this article because it doesn't exactly make sense and it doesn't really lead you to having any greater understanding. But they start discussing different ideas about the wall. One of the ideas was putting solar panels on it. And I got to thinking, if you're going to put solar panels on a wall with Mexico, aren't they going to have to face the southern side? And if they do face the southern side, aren't they going to get pelted with rocks? You know, so that's kind of a dumb idea. Then it also discussed that we need to keep part of this border wall transparent so people don't throw 50, 60-pound bags of heroin over and kill somebody. Now, what are you going to do, put glass up there? And if you're not going to put glass, you're going to have, what, some sort of metal mesh? So something like that would be so easy to get through. You just hit it with a pickaxe and a hacksaw, and you'd be done. And they're talking about it has to be – you can't dig – it has to go down at least 6 feet. Well, if you're going to build a 60-foot wall, you might need to go down a little bit lower than that. But beyond the point, haven't we already seen these tunnels tunneling under the border – much deeper than 6 feet? So how the hell is that going to work? So now let's give this some serious thought. You do have cities that are right on the border. They do have walls. These walls probably need to be beefed up, and they probably need to be extended. But when you start getting into remote countries or into, you know, remote areas, if nobody's watching the wall, I don't care what kind of wall you build. If it can be built, it can be taken apart. I've worked construction the majority of my life, and just because people may be ignorant down in Mexico doesn't mean they're stupid. When you grow up poor, you learn how to work with your hands, you learn how to make do with what you have, and you learn how to do workarounds. So a wall in a remote area has to be one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. It's going to be expensive. You're going to have to confiscate land to build it. Eminent domain. They've already discussed that. Now, what I think would be a better solution, and I've mentioned this before, but if they're going to keep putting this crap out in the news, then I'll say it again. If we just had a highway running along the border, anybody, any agent using that highway can fire up their truck and go as fast as that truck will go for a fast intercept. You would just need to have stations positioned ever so often. These stations would have to be in communication with each other. And we have a myriad of technology that's currently online, whether that be the satellites or some form of drone technology. I don't think having armed drones on the border is necessarily a good idea, but we have all sorts of drone technology we can employ. We have infrared. We have night vision. So there is no reason, if our border agents were down on the border and we were actually employing this technology, there is no reason whatsoever that you would have to build a wall. So anybody that you hear expressing this to you, try to bring up some of the points that I'm bringing up here about how it's not going to work and how it's a big waste of money and how the only reason the border is not being secured is because of policy. So let's see if I can get through this real quick. We got an article posted on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com by yours truly titled, Border Patrol Agents Find a Half Ton of Marijuana After Tracking Footprints. This is coming to us from Fox 10 Phoenix. Nogales, Arizona. The U.S. Border Patrol says agents found over a half ton of abandoned marijuana after following footprints in a rural area near the U.S.-Mexico border. Agents found 24 packages containing 1,100 pounds of marijuana Monday after a canine team patrolling the mountain roads east of Nogales. No, that doesn't make sense, but whatever. Okay, Arizona found dozens of footprints on a known smuggling route. The agents then tracked the footprints to a wooded area a few miles away. Agents removed the marijuana after determining that the smugglers were no longer in the area. The Border Patrol says the marijuana was worth over $550,000. So what the hell are these guys doing traipsing through remote areas, tracking footprints, using dogs to find what amounts to what? Abandoned bundled herbs. That, you know, if there was no drug war, it wouldn't be worth $550,000 now, would it? In fact, it probably wouldn't be much more valuable than a tomato plant. And you could pick up a little sprouted marijuana plant at Home Depot for $6 in the spring. But because of this stupid drug war, this stuff has so much value. And instead of these border agents doing their damn job, which would be stopping this stuff potentially from coming over here without proper taxes and tariffs, they're traipsing around like they're friggin' secret squirrels going through the mountains looking for like I said, bundled herbs that have been already deserted. So what the hell, man? I think it's time that... if anybody knows any border agents or anybody has the ability to talk to these border agents, maybe kind of question them and say, hey, why has this border not been secured for 30 years, 40 years, however long it's been? How come we're not focusing our efforts directly on the border? What is the point in letting them get past the border and come up here and traipse around and then trying to find them in the mountains or trying to find them up in Phoenix and apartments and all that stuff? Doesn't that seem like a waste of time and resources? And isn't that a national security threat? You know, just like we were listening to this Israeli Defense Force gentleman, he's talking about security and he's talking about going to war. But, you know, if he gave a crap about security, wouldn't he be concerned about the American border not being open? You know, maybe these people in Israel are the terrorists. In fact, you could probably make a case pretty easily that they are the terrorists. So I'm thinking of, go ahead.
Out here, David, you know, our border situation is just like, ever since I've been alive, I've been hearing about these peace talks with Palestine and Israel. Never seen anything happen. Have you? I've just seen more Palestinians dead. This is all rhetoric about the border. They don't want to shut the border down, and we know it.
I agree, and I almost question when I see articles about cashless society. I think they get a lot of power from the black market. So if they were to put us into a cashless society, how is that going to work with the black market? That's going to stop the illicit, illegal drug trade. It's going to put a big thorn in the side of the drug war. So that's kind of another thing I question. And I can say, since the 1990s, me as a young child, I remember hearing discussion of a border wall. And a year ago, as Trump was campaigning, I mean, I knew he was full of shit just because of that specific thing. He's talking about the same thing that they had been talking about 20 years previously. So if you have Trumpers around you, maybe the best way to go about it is by putting all of these things that we're talking about on our networks, putting these things in the form of a question and trying to really crack their psyche. I'm assuming that maybe deep down they're scared and maybe they're kind of cowardly or whatever, but the more we can stop these people from vocally supporting Trump, the better position that we're going to be in, the less politically effective they're going to be, because when the air and the illusion of support is not there, all of their actions become more obvious for what they really are, which is just force and dominance, that they're just dominating us, they're just forcing us. One obvious example would be the banker bailouts. Nobody wanted them. Basic logic would tell you that it was nothing but theft, that you're not going to fix the problem by handing money to the banks and keeping all of the debt in place. So as a final word before we close the show, I just want to say, challenge these people, but find a creative and artful way to do it. Maybe look back into their history and draw parallels. Or if you're seeing something on TV and you don't agree with it, find an artful and a creative way to show your opposition to it, and maybe not necessarily put the person on the defensive. We're going to need as many people as we can in this fight. So let's get to waking people up the best we can. And on that, folks, I want to say enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll be back tomorrow.